Interview with Mike Egan, EGAN, House Minority Leader, State of Georgia, Atlanta, April 29th, 1974.
Our book will be published in the spring of 76 by Basic Books, which is a division of Harper and Row. Now, saying the South had changed, and if it hadn't changed, you wouldn't likely be a minority leader in the Georgia House of Representatives, because there probably would be no minority to lead.
That's about right, yeah. And two or three people over there, Republicans before, say, 1916, well, about 60, 62, I think.
How many Republicans are now in the legislature?
Well, there are 180 members, and we have 25 Republicans in the House, and there are 56 members in the Senate, and there are 8 Republicans there.
Do you know how long have you been in?
Since 1965.
And in 1966 election, how many Republicans were elected?
Gosh, I'm sorry, I can't remember.
It hasn't really changed
at that time. The size of the House was 205. It has not changed substantially since the 1965, 66 round in there. Roughly, we've maintained about 1/6 of the membership.
Why do you think there have not been more Republicans, more growth of the party in the legislature?
Well, it's sort of hard to say, really. The state has been sort of Democratic for so long. Most of our support is in the urban areas. We had planned on an increase in the Republican numbers this year because of some reapportionments in single-member districts, but with the large black population and the rural population both rather consistently Democratic on the local level, and, the sheriff's office, the county commissioners, things like that, they've always been Democrats. And when the Republicans came on big in Georgia in 1964, there was some change in the rural areas. We picked up a few rural members in the House, but that was wiped out in 66, and since then it's been largely an urban representation among the Republicans in the House.
You are not a native of Georgia, am I correct on that?
I am. I'm
you
a
are
native of Savannah.
And you've lived in Atlanta for how long?
Since 1955. Came here right out of Harvard Law School.
So were you a Republican when you arrived here?
Yeah, I would say to the extent, I'd never participated in anything except national elections, but I had voted for Dewey and the Republicans right on the line. But I became active in the Republican Party when I got here, largely because of the situation within the Democratic Party at that time. It was very racially oriented, and we had this county unit system which prevailed in primaries, and the only way I could see at that time to undo the bad effects of that was in the general election, and that meant a strong two-party system. So we started working on that, and then the court came along and did away with the county unit system somewhere in the late 50s. I don't remember the dates, of the early 60s.
We have sort of detected what we feel sort of 5 basic kinds of Republicans in the South. Some overlap. Some people may fit into more than one category. I'm going to tell you what they are. I'd like for you just to give me a very rough estimate, and it has to be rough, on where Georgia breaks down on this. I think you would probably fit into that group we classify as people who became Republicans more as a reform group reacting to entrenched Democratic one-party control that they felt was at the very least, not progressive.
Oh, yeah.
Then you have another group that basically are transplanted Republicans from other parts of the country, many of them who came because of business transfers and so forth.
Yeah.
Then you have a group of Goldwater Republicans, people who came in the Goldwater movement,
mm-hmm.
many for racial reasons, but not all by any means. Mm-hmm. Some just plain economic conservative.
Right.
Then you've got a group of suburban Republicans who are native Southerners, but sort of felt more attuned to the Republican Party nationally, many of whom also came in with that Goldwater movement. Did I name five groups in that?
I don't know whether that's four or five, but that's about it. And of course, you omitted there was, and I'm not sure how much there's left now.
There was one other group. Yeah, the one other group were mountain Republicans. Republicans that were very strong in Virginia, North Carolina, and Tennessee, and really provided a solid base for a viable...
Sort of the native-born, and there were a lot of blacks within that group of what I consider the people who were Georgians, who were born and bred Republicans.
But not too many left.
Not too many blacks left, and even in the mountain group, that's begun to...
And even in Georgia, had a very limited, only a couple of counties involved in the mountain Republicans, right? Not mm-hmm. not large enough group to really form a base for
a
state
lot.
Party.
Not
in North Carolina,
as in Tennessee or in North Carolina, where you had
Virginia.
All of the western part of one state and the eastern part of another that was much more than we had to go on. I think it was... The party here got its new impetus through the first category you mentioned, which I placed myself in back in beginning in about 1948 and through 1952. The turnover really came in 1952 when Albert Tuttle and some others, Bob Snodgrass, Bill Schartzer, Randy Thrower, kind of moved in to take over the party on behalf of General Eisenhower in the 52 pre-convention politicking. And that's when they threw out a lot of just the old courthouse crowd who sat around waiting for the Republicans to get elected nationally and hand out a little patronage.
How large would you say that group is in the Republican Party in Georgia today?
Well, it's begun the whole thing over the past, since 1968, I note, has sort of merged very much together. As far as that old group and its activity, when I look at some of them now are really ardent liberal Democrats, I would say, people who were active working Republicans back in 1955 and 56. Who got really run off in 64 in the Goldwater years. So I guess I can't count them as being part of the group. That group is rather small. It finds its origin going back to those years. At least they are Republicans. They're certainly not active within the party anymore. Most of the people who are active would come within the latter three or four groups, the ones that came on with Goldwater, and then those who moved in from other areas of the country into the metro areas.
How about in the legislature, how would it break down?
Well, it's hard. So many of the fellows we have in the legislature are so young, they're not even able to be put in the earlier group. And they're more the suburban group. We have DeKalb County, as you probably know, is a pretty solid Republican area. A lot of our people from out there are not native born. I mean, our legislators are not native born Georgians. Those that are find themselves living within communities in which most of the populace is perhaps not. And they got enough going there and had a base to sort of take over the county from an old entrenched crowd. But there are only two or three of us in the legislature who go back to the earlier group.
there is a, well, there's obviously a Republican organization, or you wouldn't have the title minority leader.
Yeah.
How does the caucus work? Does it meet regularly?
Not really. You see, with only 29 members, we have, I have an office there, and it's three rooms. It's like a suite over there at the Capitol, and people come in and out, and we have a good bit of interchange. We meet, not in the 74 session, but 73, we met once a week for lunch, those who could make it at that particular time. The meetings, if you try to call a meeting, you know, our sessions are very short and very busy, and it's very hard to find a time in which you can get everybody together. So we don't meet regularly, but we communicate, I think, very well.
Did you discontinue the luncheon meetings?
We discontinued the luncheon meetings this year. Well, for two reasons. One, the church where we formerly met quit serving lunch, which is right across from the Capitol. And two, with 29 or so members at any luncheon, we'd never have more than 15 people able to make it, because committee meetings during lunch are constituents up that you've got to go with.
You say you communicate very well, though, but do the Republicans tend to stick together on issues, or sometimes on issues?
I would think we stick together perhaps more than the Democrats, but that is really not so much because we're Republicans, but because we're all urban. All of the Republicans are from the Atlanta metropolitan area, or Columbus, Augusta, Macon, Savannah. Well, except the two, one from Brunswick and one from Warner Robins. And I don't, you know, as a leader, I don't try to browbeat people into voting the way I'm going to vote. I suppose I vote with the minority of them as much as any other member of the caucus. But for the most part, we're together on all the important issues. When I say together, and I have 29, I consider it really good if we get 22 to 3 on any given subject.
So do the Republicans in the legislature generally also meet with the urban caucus?
Oh, yes. Well, not all of them. We do meet with the urban caucus. I'm one of the founders of the urban caucus, and I've met with them regularly.
How big is the urban caucus?
Oh, well, it's it's hard to say. It could encompass almost half the members of the legislature. But not quite. I think we claim that the 12 largest counties in the state, it's a very loosely organized thing, but it ought to have, when we were somewhat better organized, I would guess a couple of years ago, we had some more rallying points. We could turn out of 100, we could count on about 70 votes most any time, which wasn't enough to pass anything, but if you could get them solid, it was enough to stop things from passing.
Because the other side, the non-urban legislators weren't that well organized.
They are, either they weren't there or they weren't that well organized, that's right.
So the urban caucus includes practically all the Republicans as well as practically all the blacks, right?
Yeah. Right.
And so on urban issues, blacks and Republicans tend to vote alike?
Well, sometimes
or is it different between city and suburban?
We're more likely to vote for a local option sales tax than the blacks are. But I say the Republicans are than the blacks. But for the most part,
would be an example of that? I mean, the kind of issue where you do vote alike on, or have voted alike?
Gosh, Jack, it's hard for me to think now.
Was this Charter Commission one example?
Well, in the City of Atlanta Charter Commission, we had a near unanimous vote on, because an awful lot of work and compromises went into it. But the white Democrats in here in this county, where our representation is fractured between the Republicans, the blacks, and the white Democrats. But we all got together on that. That wasn't real easy to do, but after a good bit of work, everybody came together and voted for it. Matters of reapportionment went once we worked these things out to accommodate the interest of everybody we can get together on. And the blacks have developed some pretty competent leadership, as have the Republicans. And so we don't, on local matters, we don't have too much problem working out things. And it's hard for me, you know, we get some issues on which we differ quite widely, such as this effort of the DeKalb, led by the DeKalb County Republicans, to prevent the city of Atlanta from enforcing residence requirements on its policemen. The blacks, the mayor of Atlanta, being a black, has more influence with them than he does with anybody else in the city. And he was for doing that, and we were opposed to doing that, so we split on that. But most generally...
Did that fail to pass?
It did pass, but the governor vetoed it. I don't think he would have vetoed it last year or the year before, but he vetoed it this year.
How do you assess Carter as governor?
I think he was a fine governor until this past year, when most of his attention, this is a problem that any politically ambitious person will have in Georgia. You can be governor for just 4 years and that's it. And your power goes downhill from the first term, first year till the last, and combination of looking around for something else to do and not having a great deal of political power within the legislature. I think he could have done better than he'd done as governor, but then he just seems to have other things on his mind this year. I don't think he's doing a good job as governor right now. But I don't know how, you know, if he did, it's a bad system, this 4 year term, I think, 1 4 year term. And I think we ought to change that one of these days, go to 2 4-year term. Carter, in my view of him, I was accused of being one of his many floor leaders over there, because so much of what he was for in his early years as governor, I was for. I helped him a lot. And he has said that, you know, on any most issues, he could count number one on the Republicans and two on the Urban Caucus to give him support. But he's been a good governor.
Beyond his reorganization, what else has he accomplished?
Well, I think he's given some impetus to the changes that have been brought about in our system of criminal justice, the innovations in the mental health area. I don't know if you consider that part of the reorganization, but he brought in some good people in the state government, I think. Well-intended people, honest people. And I think the reorganization was a step in the right direction, and that's the one he lavished so much effort on. He's been a leader in environmental legislation. I think what we have done in Georgia is about as good as, better than most states have been able to accomplish. And he's been for some things that haven't passed, the consumer protection legislation, which he didn't get around to until kind of late. State Chamber of Commerce and that type managed to defeat that, but generally I think he's been a good governor. It's hard for me to think back when you have a short term in the legislature and then you get back into practicing law. I can't even remember a lot of the things he's accomplished.
Well, How much effect do you think Watergate is having and will have on growth, or retarding growth, of the Republican Party in the South?
Well, I've tried to think about it. I think it's going to prevent much significant growth. I think, you know, just Watergate as such, I'm not sure that's really the whole mix of Watergate and the state of the economy and the inflation, things of that sort, are going to make it pretty difficult for the Republicans this year in the South and anywhere else, I believe. I figure in my own district, there'll be enough people that'll just go in there mad and just vote straight Democrat, so it'll probably cost, you know, 4 or 5% of the votes, I would guess.
Your name had been mentioned earlier this year, and really last year, as a potential candidate for governor, at least by other people. Did you actively consider running for governor?
Yeah.
Was Watergate a factor in your decision?
No. It was more of a personal decision than anything else. After spending a solid 6 or 7 weeks over there, I just decided I really wouldn't be happy devoting my full time to politics, to government. It's just too much of a personal grind. I've got 6 children and a lot of commitments to them. Some of them are fairly young, and got a lot of education ahead of them. A combination of financial factors and more of a, as my wife says, she was much more afraid that I might win than I might lose, because you can lose and you're done with it, you know, done with everything. You're back practicing law. But there are just more, so many aspects to being governor other than just running the state rather not my cup of tea, so to speak. I decided I'd rather just do what I'm doing.
How do you define the Southern strategy, and what effect do you think it has had and will have on the Republican Party development in the South? What does the term mean to you?
Well, to me it means a term that I don't know who coined it, but I read it in the press. I really attribute it to, at least if not its origin, its continued being to media. And we, among the Southern Republicans, like to think of it as a sort of an equal treatment policy of the federal government toward the South. I don't notice any great favoritism on the part of the Nixon administration toward the South. The whole thing is, as a matter of fact, we certainly have our complaints about things, but we find they're not unlike the complaints Republicans all over have about the operation of the government in Washington. But I just think it was something that a bunch of writers and liberals wanted to jump on to accuse Nixon of something. That's about all it's ever meant to me. I never paid much attention to it.
Well, do you think it has had any, whatever the strategy is, do you think it's had any effect on the development of the party?
That's hard. You know, I'm not as close to party affairs as many Republicans that you probably talk to. I don't know that it's had any effect on the development of the party. I really don't. I think that's something that comes from the local level, the grassroots kind of effort, and until it comes from there, I don't know that there's a heck of a lot the president can do about it. I'm sure that idea of, you know, all the potential candidates for the presidency coming to Georgia, as they now do, which they certainly did not used to do. But that's not a part of anything the Nixon administration had anything to do with. That started with Eisenhower. And there's been a continuing trend to recognize the growth and the potential growth of the South as a real economic factor in the nation. I think that's really all it is, growth in population. They are, you know, it's now at least in the national scene, it's a two-party region. The states go either way. I think that's a good, healthy development. Whether it's had any effect on the growth of the party or not, I just really don't know. You have to ask Mr. Shaw about that.
We have. The has industrial development, economic development of the state been one of your interests in the legislature?
No, I haven't focused much on that. Most of the, I've had my narrow interest over there have been in the money field. I'm on the Appropriations Committee and the Ways and Means Committee. I used to be on the Judiciary Committee, but I got off of that to get on to the Rules Committee. So I did spend a good bit of time in the early days I was in on matters pertaining to the judiciary and things that went through there. Now it's been, I've always had a big interest in the environmental type legislation, and that and tax measures and the appropriations bill have been my narrow range of interest, although as the minority leader I try to take an interest in all the important things that come on over there. Well, I did before I was a minority leader. But industrial growth and development is not, except to the extent that, you know, the tax policy of the state would encourage it or discourage it, or the environmental policy of the state would encourage it.
That's really what I was driving at in terms of public policy as it affects industrial development, meaning pretty much taxes and environmental issues.
Mm. Well, I've been pretty much allied with Governor Carter on that, that I don't believe that it's a good thing in the long run to do any, I mean, to have easy environmental laws for industry or to have tax gimmicks to attract industries.
Are there any tax gimmicks? I understand that Georgia has certainly fewer than most southern states.
I don't know of any. I mean, you know, there's some things that we have that I suppose are, you know, there's an exemption in the sales tax law for purchase of machinery to expand for new and expanded industry. And that, in a sense, is kind of a gimmick. But Georgia has very few. We have really not gone in for that.
There's no exemption in so far as property tax, am I correct?
No.
But
I know, as a matter of fact, in many of our counties, the property taxes is moving from a local level situation to one where the state is exercising more and more control over it. There are still, however, a number of counties in which a major industry will get some tax break from the local government. I just know that's a fact.
Is this in terms of assessment or just applying a tax rate?
In the terms of assessment.
Industry is applied, then. I mean, industry is assessed by local assessors in Georgia.
Everything is, except public utilities. They are assessed at the state level. But the whole other assessment function is at the local level.
Is that at the county level, then?
County level. Yeah, we've now got it where they've got to be, since I've been in the legislature, where every city assesses the same as the county. They just have one assessment.
But it's not a uniform rate statewide, uniform
no.
assessment ratio.
Well, it's supposed to be. It is in theory. All property, except certain classes which have been by constitutional amendment made special, all property is supposed to be assessed at 40% of its fair market value. And our revenue commissioner is moving with the facilities available to him to enforce that. And it's been quite traumatic in many areas of the state. But then once it's assessed, the millage applied is up to the local folks, except for one quarter mill, which the state assesses.
And the state does have a quarter mill statewide tax. Is that earmarked?
The only earmarked tax in Georgia is for gasoline taxes, earmarked for highway bridge construction. But that's the only one. Yeah, that's unlike the number of, unlike Florida, I know, and unlike a number of southern states. We've tried to get rid of that one, but not without much success.
Is there any active move afoot, or is it merely a sense of frustration in terms of county consolidation?
Well, it's more the latter. The moves afoot have been really at the local level. We've had some counties who've talked about it, and, but as a practical matter, it's really not politically feasible anytime soon. I've often thought about how to go about it, and it seems to me the only way maybe to get it done is just to pass a constitutional amendment that says, pass it, say, in 74, that says by 1984 there shall be no more than blank counties, and they can try to do it themselves in the meantime. If they don't, the legislature will do it. But
either that or some sort of minimum population.
Something of that sort. Oh yeah, there are ways to do it. I mean, you can adopt guidelines for them to get together, and the state would have to come in and give some financial help, because they have different financial makeups of the counties, and they have powerful influences at work in particular counties. That, I've always been one to remove the assessing power from the counties, and the view that that ought to be done on the state level. But that would get it then where I don't think one company could control as much as some of them do the whole political and economic status of the county. And that's what's been happening in so many of our counties. If we could, and that's what I think the last proposal to start moving on was between Irwin and Ben Hill County down in south middle Georgia, and I think that really fell apart when it got to the, you know, the tax assessing problems. People just were reluctant to give up the foxholes they had so neatly gotten dug over the years.
That was a bigger problem than resolving the county seat issue.
I believe so. I don't think most, you know, in those small counties, I don't think there's, a little concern about where the county seat is, but that's one of the factors. You know, you got a courthouse, you got some old employees there, and just the problems of showing that that there's economy. And what we've been doing is an alternate to county consolidation. We've just been removing more and more functions from county government, passing them on up to the state.
And then I presume the planning districts.
Yeah, APDCs and state.
When was the last time that Georgia, is Georgia still using its old constitution, the one from the turn of the century?
No, we have a 1945 constitution.
Is there any move afoot to update that?
Well, every 4 years, somebody running for governor says, and we've had some instances, we had a 1964 constitution which the courts would not let on the ballot because it had been done by a malapportioned legislature. That's as well as I recall it. I was elected the year after that was done. I remember working with a committee that Governor Sanders appointed on that, but and the House passed a new constitution in 1969, I believe. The Senate never passed it. And it's everybody recognizes the need for it, but it's hard to get that done. We need a good, strong governor who will make that his number one priority. That's the only way you can get it done.
We've been given the impression that the election of Lester Maddox as governor, among other things, resulted in the legislature assuming considerably more power than it had before,
mm-hmm.
and a much greater independence than it had before.
Well, a lot of the media and the press has written about that more currently, looking back on it. But I believe that was going to come about. Well, it was not only because it was Lester who was elected, but the method in which he was elected, which was by the legislature, certainly made it easier. But I think that had Bo Calloway been elected governor that year, the same thing would have happened.
But for different reasons.
Had Lester been elected by the people in the November election, I don't believe he could have stopped it from happening, being just because of the type of person he was, and he didn't know any of the legislators, or very few, didn't have the same kind of political base that governors have had in the past. And I know that the Speaker of the House, who was determined that it was going to happen, didn't make any difference who was nominated or who was elected, and that's when it was going to happen.
That was George Smith?
George L. Smith.
And he...
He wasn't Speaker then, but
yeah, he got elected.
He was determined he was going to be Speaker, and it didn't make any difference who was elected governor. Running then with the only person who might have been able to really exercise some control, I think, would have been Ellis Arnold, who was not nominated, but that was a force that had been building during the whole time that Carl Sanders was governor. He was the last one, and I think it didn't make any difference. But the way Lester was elected and the fact that it was Lester certainly did ease the pain of it considerably.
Do you share the perception of many that Ellis Arnold got the nomination that year that Calloway would have been elected?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think most of the Maddox people would have voted for both, and that together with... Well, a lot of them would have. Yeah, I think he would have been elected. And Bo would have been elected if it hadn't been for that write-in bid. What a painful period that was. Because that would have been a real breakthrough for the Republicans. This idea of doing it from the local level, it's a slow, slow process.
You were in the legislature at that time, and there's a story we hear, and we keep getting some conflicting reports on this. And one version, there's several versions, I think there are several things going on simultaneously, really. But one version is that there were some Democratic legislators who felt we can't have Lester Maddox as governor, who then approached Calloway and entered into some sort of informal negotiations, wanting to know how strong he was and how much strength he had and whether they could make some difference, and then they found out that his count was off, among other things, and felt that he would not, that among other things, turned him off.
Well, I don't know. I would live through every minute of that, but my recollection, I know we did approach a number of Democrats. We knew there were Democrats. We knew those who had been elected from districts that had voted for both. And we started with those, and there were some who were very helpful to both. Now, whether there were some who started off for him and ended up against him before we actually voted in the legislature, I imagine there were some of those also. But whether there was any, you know, group of leading Democrats who called upon Bo, if there were, I don't know of that as in those terms. I remember we had a few rooms over at the Marriott and invited all the ones up there that we thought we could do something with for one reason or another. But just didn't work out.
How close did it get?
I don't remember what the vote was. You could find that out pretty easily by looking at the journal for that year. When was that, 1967?
182-66. Mm-hmm.
That was in a joint session of the House and the Senate. Yeah, there weren't very many Democrats voting for Bo. Those that did were largely from areas that had voted overwhelmingly for him in the election.
How big a role did Sanders play in that?
I don't know that he played any. I really don't. He's accused of having been favorable to Maddox and that they formed some alliance back then, but I don't know anything about it. The man who had been his floor leader, George Busby, voted for Callaway on the grounds that people in his district had voted for Callaway. I don't really recall Carl having anything to do with it. I'm sure he did, but I didn't know anything about it. I wasn't a minority leader. I was, you know, brand new. The first vote we had voted on in 66 when I first took my seat was whether or not we were going to seat Julian Bond. And the first vote in 67 was to elect the governor. From then on, we haven't had any moments of high drama like that. Interestingly enough, when we voted on the Bond thing, my recollection was that the whites voting to seat him were numbered to maybe 10 or something like that, and the majority of those were Republicans.
How did you vote on that one?
I voted to seat him. I think we had maybe there were only, I don't remember how many voted. All the blacks voted to seat him, and then we had a number of new blacks elected at the same time. I think maybe there were six or seven whites. I can't remember.
What kind of reaction did you get to that vote?
Initially, quite adverse among the people in my district, at least those who bothered to make their wishes, their views known. But, you know, over the years, it's been one of the things I can look on with considerable pride. And I think the thinking of most people on that thing has changed. That was just a highly emotional situation.
What was your reasoning at the time?
Well, I just thought that the people in any district had the right to elect whoever they wanted to elect. And that was it. It was pretty simple. You know, as long as he met the qualifications to hold office. And that if they were to get rid of him, they would have to do it, you know, when he came up for election year.
Is the Georgia Republican Party sort of at the moment, I mean, the word we keep getting is that their candidates for governor are people who are not heavyweights?
I would have to concur in that.
Are they building towards 78, or is any sort of conscious thought given that at all?
That I don't know. We're always building towards some time, but you have to build around somebody for a statewide office, and I don't know of any building toward then. There were the thing this year, how there was a lot of emphasis on, you know, me and Bo Calloway or Fletcher Thompson, just the names of people except for myself who had run the statewide office before. And for one reason or another, Fletcher just having run in 72 and been defeated, getting started in a new law practice, and Bo being the Secretary of Army, you know, just we didn't have that much well-known talent to run. I don't know, that certainly wasn't any conscious effort on the part of anybody to say, don't run this year, it's a bad year. We'll build towards 74. But I'm sure we'll be running somebody, or somebody will be running as a Republican. I hope every time from now on.
Is there any dominant figure in the Republican Party?
Well, I guess